Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. And all of it is brought to you by the Dollar Shave Club. Right now, you can get your Dollar Shave Club starter set for just $5 exclusively at dollarshaveclub.com/martini. More on that a little bit later. Jim, let's talk about our good martini. And the good news is, we're probably not going to see the Olympic Games get nuked in South Korea. It's a low bar to clear, but we'll take it. NBC News, North Korea will send a delegation of officials and athletes to next month's Winter Olympic Games in South Korea. It was announced Tuesday after the first high-level talks between the countries in more than 2 years. The two nations also agreed to hold military talks aimed at reducing animosity along their tense border and to, quote-unquote, actively cooperate in the Games, which opened February 9th in Pyeongchang, some 50 miles from the boundary. The sensitive discussions held in Panmunjom in the demilitarized zone were closed to outside observers. So, Jim, obviously this doesn't solve anything on the major issues about North Korea's nuclear ambitions. They're willing, perhaps, to sell it to some of the worst actors on the world stage. The threat itself that they have threatened to our own borders. So obviously a lot of work to go here, but the fact that they're going to participate in these games means we can at least probably breathe a sigh of relief about the games themselves. And the fact that they're talking hopefully means that our strategy is working a bit.
This is a indication that our approach is working. We, you know, this may just be the typical unpredictability of the North Korean regime. After being really hostile for a stretch, all of a sudden they will reverse course and seem at least somewhat more amenable to talks, at the very least, with the South Koreans. And you can see a scenario in which our more forceful rhetoric, our you know, continuing military exercises and various other things we use to demonstrate to the North Koreans that we are not intimidated, could be kind of a bad cop to the South Korean regime's good cop. And you could see them gradually come to a more less threatening, more amenable position. As you mentioned, at the very least, the good news now is that while it was never terribly likely that North Korea was ever going to strike South Korea during the Olympics, it would be a pretty good way to ensure that the entire world would want to hate them and destroy them immediately. We know that the North Korean regime has a long history of saber-rattling and doing things like firing mortars or firing missiles and firing at South Korean naval ships and things like that. And so with their athletes participating in the games, perhaps they feel like they have a bit more of a buy-in and an incentive to not make trouble during the games. Plus, one other silver lining to all this, Greg, you know what happened, what it means to the U.S. Olympic team if the North Koreans are participating in the Olympics?
What?
One more team to beat.
That's right.
And as people have been saying, look, I don't expect them to be huge competitors. As you know, everybody who can run fast in North Korea is already out of the country.
That'd be funny if some of them defected. Might not be good for the long-term policy, but it'd be good for those athletes. So we'll see how it goes.
Greg, I do not find it impossible to imagine a very crowded flight going to South Korea for the ceremonies and a strangely empty plane coming back after the closing ceremonies.
Last point on this subject, yeah, just a couple of weeks ago, we were talking about Lindsey Graham, who said that if North Korea participates, we shouldn't. I assume that's not going to happen, right? We are going to send our people there.
That'd be kind of a spoiler, huh? You think NBC would be disappointed? You know, hey, sorry, no American athletes. Yeah, you know, it's kind of like, you know, showing up to a party and somebody's wearing the same outfit. Oh, my goodness, I can't stay here. So
I don't think that's going to happen. Trump has never said anything along those lines, and Haley hasn't said it in a long time. So let's hope that it won't, because that accomplishes nothing. All right, let's move on to the bad martini now, Jim. And we have talked at various times in recent weeks, as sensitively as we can, given that there are some elderly members of the U.S. Senate, as to whether or not they're still up to the job. We've talked about John McCain missing the tax vote, for example, as he gets cancer treatment. We've talked about Thad Cochran and the votes that he's missed. Orrin Hatch is 83, just announced last week he's not running for an eighth term to the U.S. Senate. So perhaps you're thinking the U.S. Senate's going to look a little bit younger come 2019. Well, maybe not. Republican Joe Arpaio, according to the Washington Examiner, a close ally of President Trump and a former sheriff known for his provocative approach to combating illegal immigration, is running for Senate in Arizona. The 85-year-old Arpaio could shake up the late August Republican primary in a critical open seat race to replace retiring Senator Jeff Flake. Trump pardoned Arpaio last summer, sparing the former sheriff jail time after he was convicted of ignoring a federal court order in a racial profiling case. The other candidate in the race is Kelly Ward, who challenged John McCain in the primary in 2016. Drucker refers to her as unimpressive. The main candidate in this race is expected to be Congresswoman Martha McSally. She's a military vet, more of a moderate, and she is expected to be the person who could perhaps do the best for Republicans in an increasingly purple state come November. So, Jim, there's a lot of people that like Arpaio. There's a lot of people that don't, based on the most recent election results he was in. The number of people that don't like him is growing, and the opposite number is true for those who do like him. In the end, we want to keep this seat. And he's 85. So even if you like the legacy of Joe Arpaio, I'm not sure this is the right move.
This is a tough road ahead of him. He's got to take on all of his primary rivals. He's got to overcome his Democratic opponent in the general election. And, of course, the actuarial tables. Look, you don't see a lot of 85-year-old rookies out there. And it's worth noting that 2016, which was not that long ago, President Trump was won the state, not by a huge margin, but by a fairly, you know, sizable enough margin. And Arpaio lost his reelection bid as county sheriff. So this idea that this is, you know, oh, there's some great clamoring, you know, the people are yearning to see this, you know, this guy who had needed a presidential pardon for getting in trouble with the law. You know, they're clamoring to see him in the Senate. No, I think he's just kind of gotten addicted to the spotlight. This is a drier, older Roy Moore, somebody who really probably, you know, it's time to enjoy those golden years. It's time to step off the stage and let somebody else represent the party and its values and perhaps stop embarrassing the party and its values on a regular basis. But here we are, and he will undoubtedly get a large amount of media attention. No doubt some segment of the electorate will vote for him. Some segment of the conservative movement will continue to tout and celebrate him because he's a tough guy and he really shows it up and all that stuff. John Gabriel over at Ricochet lives out in this part of the country, and he has some really great reporting on the actual record of the sheriff and simple abuses of power that we would not tolerate from anybody on the other side of the aisle. So I don't understand why we would tolerate them from somebody who claims to be on our side of the aisle. So, yeah, the continued sense of freak shows and gadflies and you know, people who just want to get further attention and keep their names in the news, keep their political you know, ambitions burning forever, continues, Greg. And, you know, this will not end as quickly and easily as Roy Moore, who last I checked has not actually still has yet to concede to Senator Doug Jones. Keeping in mind, he's senator now. Like, you know, never mind the race is over, the recount is over, the certification is over. He's sworn in, but I'm sure Roy Moore is pledging he's still going to continue fighting this.
I'm sure somehow that'll get overturned. Jim, interesting that it's an August primary, so I believe there's no runoff. Whoever gets the most votes, regardless of how many candidates, I don't think you have to get to 50% there. And the fact that Kelly Ward is still in this race and Joe Arpaio is in this race probably means a better shot, actually, for Martha McSally to win from the more moderate position. But it's interesting just the way this is shaping up in Arizona, because when Jeff Flake announced that he wasn't going to run for reelection, you would have thought there would have been greater interest in this race. But I think there's just a lot of people out there, and they don't want to look like they're anticipating this, but they're waiting to see whether John McCain can serve for much longer. And so they're trying to make nice with the governor. They're trying to see if there's going to be an open race sometime in Arizona. And so the dynamics of whether to get into the Flake race and the seat that he's vacating makes this a very odd dynamic in this election cycle, it seems.
Keep in mind for that August primary, Greg, is that obviously you're right. You know, primaries generally have much lower turnout. And let's keep in mind, a good question is going to be in that primary turnout, how many people die going to the polls in the Arizona heat? Who schedules something, a major event for August in Arizona? A significant number of voters will burst into flames just trying to get there. But it's a dry heat, Greg.
It is a dry heat. And really, the greatest sighs of relief in this race came when John Gabriel announced he would not seek the Senate seat.
What's he hiding behind that cup? He has no chin.
Speaking of chins, if you need a good shave on yours and you need other good products to make it nice and smooth and your skin to smell and feel good, Dollar Shave Club's where you want to be. You've heard us talk of the amazing shave that we get from our Dollar Shave Club razor, especially when we use it with our Dr. Carver's Shave Butter. Well, now we're here to tell you that we're never giving up our membership. In fact, we're adding even more Dollar Shave Club products to our daily routines.
Now, Dollar Shave Club makes products for your hair, face, skin, shower, everything you need. They have me looking and feeling amazing, and it's all their own original stuff. They use only the finest premium ingredients, and they deliver it to you just like they do with their razors. That means no more annoying trips to the store, cruising up and down the aisles, looking at shelf upon shelf, and asking, what is that, and what do I do with it? I use Dollar Shave Club for almost everything, razors, body cleanser, hair gel, butt wipes. Dollar Shave Club has you covered from head to toe.
And now's a great time to give Dollar Shave Club a try. You can get your first month of their best razor, along with travel-size versions of shave butter, body cleanser, and yes, even butt wipes, for just $5. After that, replacement cartridges ship for just a few bucks a month. It's the Dollar Shave Club starter set. Get yours for just $5 exclusively at dollarshaveclub.com/martini. One more time, dollarshaveclub.com/martini. All right, Jim, on to our crazy martini now. And we touched on this yesterday in our bad martini about how Oprah Winfrey gives a well-received speech at the Golden Globes. And instantly the media is fawning all over her and wondering if she's going to mount a 2020 presidential bid. And the Democrats who are on TV can't help but get on the eager speculation as well. As we mentioned yesterday, CNN had multiple panels on. One of them included former Obama czar of something or other, Van Jones. Was he the Green Czar? I can't even remember now. But he's on CNN a lot now, and he just loves Oprah and talks about how awesome she would do and how easily she would win, and then casually mentions towards the end that he has no idea if she has moved on her position at all.
Well, the question is, does she want to be demoted from Queen of the Universe to President of the United States? That's the only question. If she wants to do it, she can do it. She is probably the most beloved human being on Earth. She's probably the most beloved carbon-based life form on Earth. She could, if she runs, she will destroy anybody in front of her. The question is, does she want to do it? I've talked to a lot of people who are close to her, who are around her. There's basically, you know, bedlam in Oprah land right now, as people, you know, people are begging her, please run, please run, please run. But she's given no indication that she has moved off of her position, that she doesn't want to do it.
Oh, so there you go. Wall-to-wall coverage, but she's given no indication that she's actually thought all that much deeper about it. So, Jim, it's fascinating that we're basically seeing the same type of media rhetoric on the left that we saw in the stages of the Obama campaign when he first became competitive. All our problems are going to go away. Everybody loves them. Let's vote for them.
Yeah, and look, it's hard to begrudge, you know, Van Jones, if he's been an Oprah fan his whole life, for being enthusiastic and excited about it. But this is like, everybody going bonkers about Oprah is kind of doing, I think, the American electorate a disservice. Because this is not actually a good idea. I'll let you know, listeners decide their own assessment of the Trump presidency and how they think Trump is handling the duties of the presidency. Certainly, President Obama was not weighed down with decades of experience in governing when he ran. No doubt Van Jones thinks very highly of him. But you can look to the governorship of Arnold Schwarzenegger. I think most people would argue it was kind of a disappointment. Jesse Ventura in Minnesota. By and large, people who jump from the world of celebrity to the world of politics find governing a heck of a lot more difficult than they expected. Because just, you know, it's almost as if people think, well, both politicians and celebrities are on TV a lot. So one person, this person would be good for the other, you know, good for that job. Every time I mention this, of course, somebody mentions, what about Reagan? Well, let's remember, Reagan was, you know, governor of California for two terms. He'd been active in politics for a very long time. And not just, when I say active, not just like, oh, he showed up for some rallies or things like that. He wrote his column. He was doing his radio commentaries. He wrote about the issues in great detail, and he knew the details of the issues backwards and forwards. You know, politics, elected office can't be something that you just dabble in. So as much as Van Jones might love Oprah, I think, you know, almost everyone has a responsibility to knock this down as a bad idea of turning the office of the presidency into celebrity in chief. That's not actually what the job is constitutionally set up to do. It is set up to be the head of the executive branch, to enforce the laws and be commander in chief of the armed forces. Big, important responsibilities. If we want to have somebody else do a job that's like the the equivalent of the monarchy, you know, some sort of like national personality in chief, fine. We can set up that office and give them no official power or something like that. The presidency is not supposed to be a talk show host. The presidency is not supposed to be a generic celebrity type. It's deeply disappointing to see the entire, not just the regular entertainment world media go bonkers over this, but the political world media go bonkers about this. And it's been fascinating to see a couple of voices on the left say, whoa, I know I enjoy a good liberal revenge fantasy as much as the next person, but we have no idea what Oprah actually thinks of any of the issues. What does she think about everything from border security? Probably, I assume she'd be opposed. We assume she'd be a down-the-line Democrat, but deep down, we don't really know what she thinks of any of these things. And eventually, if she jumped in, she would have to start articulating what she believes on the details of these issues. It would probably end up irking a good portion of the people who already love her. So one reason to be a little bit skeptical of this Oprah buzz. But, you know, when the Van Joneses of the world are saying that she is the most beloved carbon-based life form on the earth, I mean, has he checked the numbers on all those pandas in China, Greg? I'm fairly certain, you know, Ying Ying or somebody else like that probably is roughly as beloved as Oprah Winfrey is.
I guarantee you in Washington, the pandas are more popular than any politician.
Bingo, exactly. You're right. Not only the most popular person in Washington, or I should say carbon-based life form. But not silicone-based life forms. Anyway, on that happy note, Greg, I just, you know, the suspicion is that we've learned nothing from the past two couple election cycles. The media continues to be entranced by celebrity. And as much as I'd like to blame the media, it's also worth noting that a good chunk of the electorate is, you know, just they get stars in their eyes as soon as they see somebody famous, and they believe, oh, wouldn't it be wonderful to have that person in the office without ever really thinking about what we need a president to do.
Yes, and that's a whole other discussion, since Republicans for years and years ripped the left for all their celebrities and their inane ramblings. But hey, Arnold Schwarzenegger wants to run for governor. Hey, let's go for that. Donald Trump wants to run for president. Let's do that. Oh, man. But I think you hit on an important point there. There's a lot of differences, obviously, between Trump and Winfrey, even though they both did reality TV and they're insanely rich. Trump doesn't care what people think of him. Winfrey does. And you mentioned also the issues that people don't know where she stands. According to Americans for Tax Reform, and the Washington Free Beacon is reporting this, Oprah Winfrey once said, quote, "I think it's so irritating that once I die, 55% of my money goes to the United States government. You know why it's so irritating? Because you already paid nearly 50% when the money was earned." So Democrats, you might want to reconsider this.
Whoa. I take everything back. I like Oprah now. Wouldn't it be kind of funny if she turned out to be like a lot more conservative than everybody expected? Anyway, wouldn't count on it, but kind of, you know, the perfect irony for everybody falling in love with celebrities when you don't actually know what they. This is why campaigns put out white papers. You know,
amazing stuff. Hopefully the Oprah buzz will be gone by tomorrow, but probably not. Jim, talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to visit our friends at Dollar Shave Club. Get the Dollar Shave Club starter set for just $5. DollarShaveClub.com/martini. And tune in again Wednesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.